Why is the Bible so repetitive? There's a lot of parts you get to, and it's like deja vu. Have I read this before? You sort of think, wait a minute, have I, you know, flipped onto the wrong page? What's going on? What I'm talking about is Israel's repeated failure. They fail and fail and fail again. The story of Israel is incredibly repetitive. They fail individually and they fail as a nation again and again. And we've come to some of those deja vu moments in the book of Samuel. So we're going to have two readings in the middle of the sermon. First, Samuel's speech in chapter 12, and then second, Saul at Gilgal in chapter 13. So Samuel's speech in chapter 12, this is repetitive. And it's repetitive for two reasons I want you to watch out for as you listen to the reading. So first, in his speech, Samuel points out the repetition. So he points out the repetition in Israel's history by referring to the time of the judges, which was a time when Israel was stuck in a cycle, repeating the same cycle. Second, we've heard speeches like this before. The speech itself is a deja vu moment. Samuel gathers the people together, he points them to what's happened in the past, and he pleads with them to serve the Lord with all their heart. And at many key moments throughout Israel's history, leaders have done exactly that. So as you're listening to the reading, keep those two things in mind. Mary's going to come and read it to us.
So the reading is 1 Samuel 12, starting at verse 6. And if you've got a Pew Bible, it's on page 281. Then Samuel said to the people, "It is the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron and brought your forefathers up out of Egypt. Now then, stand here, because I am going to confront you with the evidence before the Lord as to all the righteous acts performed by the Lord for you and your fathers. After Jacob entered Egypt, they cried to the Lord for help, and the Lord sent Moses and Aaron and brought your forefathers out of Egypt and settled them in this place. But they forgot the Lord their God. So he sold them into the hands of Sisera, the commander of the army of Hazor, and into the hands of the Philistines and the king of Moab, who fought against them. They cried out to the Lord and said, 'We have sinned, we have forsaken the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths. But now deliver us from the hands of our enemies and we will serve you.' Then the Lord sent Jerubbaal, Barak, Jephthah, and Samuel, and he delivered you from the hands of your enemies on every side, so that you lived securely. But when you saw that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, was moving against you, you said to me, 'No, we want a king to rule over us,' even though the Lord your God was your king. Now here is the king you have chosen, the one you asked for. See, the Lord has set a king over you. If you fear the Lord and serve and obey him, and do not rebel against his commands, and if both you and the king who reigns over you follow the Lord your God, good. But if you do not obey the Lord, and if you rebel against his commands, his hand will be against you, as it was against your fathers. Now then, stand still and see the great thing the Lord is about to do before your eyes. Is it not the wheat harvest now? I will call upon the Lord to send thunder and rain, and you will realize what an evil thing you did in the eyes of the Lord when you asked for a king." Then Samuel called upon the Lord, and that same day the Lord sent thunder and rain. So all the people stood in awe of the Lord and of Samuel. The people all said to Samuel, "Pray to the Lord your God for your servants, so that we will not die, for we have added to our other sins the evil of asking for a king." "Do not be afraid," Samuel replied. "You have done all this evil. Yet do not turn away from the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Do not turn away after useless idols. They can do no good, nor can they rescue you, because they are useless. For the sake of his great name, the Lord will not reject his people, because the Lord was pleased to make you his own. As for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by failing to pray for you, and I will teach you the way that is good and right. But be sure to fear the Lord and serve him faithfully with all your heart. Consider what great things he has done for you. Yet, if you persist in doing evil, both you and your king will be swept away." This is the word of the Lord.
So did you spot Samuel pointing out the repetition? It's in verses 9 to 11. Samuel explains Israel settled in the promised land, but then they forgot God. They were taken over by their enemies. They cry out to God for help. God sends a judge who rescues them. They stay faithful to God, usually until that judge dies, and then they forget about God again. So it's a cycle. The people are okay. They forget God. They're conquered by their enemies. They cry out to God for help. God sends a judge to save them, and they're okay again. But this happens many, many times. God sends many judges. So Othniel, Deborah, Gideon, Samson, round and round it goes. And Samuel just mentions four of them in verse 11, but it's clear he's referencing the whole cycle. So Samuel points out the repetition in Israel's history. And second, the speech itself is a deja vu moment. So Samuel includes himself in his short list of judges, and he is the last of the judges of Israel. So he's recognizing that he himself is part of this repetitive cycle. He's aware of the deja vu moment that's going on right there as he does the speech. And that's wider than just the judges. So at many key points in Israel's history, the leaders have gathered the people together, pointed to the past, and pleaded with them to serve God and not turn away. And the most obvious example, or the biggest example, is Deuteronomy. So the entire book of Deuteronomy is really one long speech from Moses, done at a key time in history when the people were just about to go into the promised land. Moses is just about to die, and he's about to hand over leadership to Joshua. And Moses does exactly what we've seen Samuel do. He gathers the people together, he points them to their past, and he pleads with them to follow the Lord. And then at the end of Joshua's life, so the end of the book of Joshua, he does the same thing. He gathers the people together, he looks back over their history, and he pleads with them to serve the Lord. And we could mention many other examples. And after all these speeches, sooner or later, often sooner, the people turn away from the Lord again. And we find ourselves back in a very similar situation. And each time it happens in the story, you're given fresh hope that maybe this time it will be different. So Samuel takes his place in a long line of Israel's leaders who have called people back to the Lord. But maybe this time with Samuel it would be different. Samuel asked the Lord to send thunder and rain, so the people were in awe. So maybe they will serve the Lord from now on. They now have a permanent king, someone who's always there to fight their battles, always there to protect them. So maybe this time it will be different. We'll have the second reading in a minute. It's a pretty clear part of the story, but I'll give you two things to look out for again. First thing, the people have been scared of the Lord because he sent the thunder and rain. What are they scared of now? And second, Israel now has a king. As I said, this is new. This is maybe a reason to hope. This time it will be different. But we'll see in the reading, our hopes are dashed. And that the king won't serve the Lord either. Claire's going to come and read that to us now.
This reading is on page 282 if you want to follow it. Chapter 13, starting at verse 5. Samuel rebukes Saul. The Philistines assemble to fight Israel with 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, and soldiers as numerous as the sand on the seashore. They went up and camped at Michmash, east of Beth Arvon. When the men of Israel saw that their situation was critical and that their army was hard pressed, they hid in caves and thickets, among the rocks and in pits and cisterns. Some Hebrews even crossed the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. Saul remained at Gilgal, and all the troops with him were quaking with fear. He waited for 7 days, the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and Saul's men began to scatter. So he said, "Bring me the burnt offering and the fellowship offerings." And Saul offered up the burnt offering. Just as he finished making the offering, Samuel arrived and Saul went out to greet him. "What have you done?" asked Samuel. Saul replied, "When I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come at the set time and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, I thought, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal and I have not sought the Lord's favor. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering." "You acted foolishly," Samuel said. "You have not kept the command of the Lord your God gave you. If you had, he would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time. But now your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him leader of his people, because you have not kept the Lord's command."
So the people, you probably noticed, the people are scared now of the Philistine army. So they hide in caves and other places. And it doesn't make any sense, does it? If you think about all the impossible situations that the Lord has saved them in the past, they should trust him now. But the focus of this part of the story is Saul's failure. So let's zoom in on that for a few minutes. So back in chapter 10, after Samuel had anointed Saul as king, he explained to Saul what was going to happen and what he should do. And everything that Samuel said was going to happen has happened. It happens in the next couple of chapters. And the last thing Samuel told Saul was an instruction. He tells Saul, "Go to Gilgal. I'll definitely come to you there, but you need to wait 7 days for me. And when I come, I'll make some sacrifices and I'll tell you what to do next." So we're here in chapter 13 and Saul is waiting for Samuel, but he gets to the seventh day and he can't wait any longer. Samuel's not here, the people are scared, they're starting to abandon him. So he decides, right, I've got to do something. I'll take matters into my own hands. Samuel was going to make some sacrifices, so I'll do that. And I imagine Saul might have just been washing his hands after finishing the sacrifices and Samuel arrives and says, "What have you done?" And Saul makes some excuses, but Samuel tells him what he has done. "You have done a foolish thing. You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. And because of that, your descendants will not continue as rulers of Israel, but there'll be a new king in your place." What do we think about this? I wonder whether it might seem a bit harsh of God to reject Saul just because he couldn't quite wait the full 7 days. Is the author perhaps trying to ask that question of us? What do you think, reader? Is Saul that bad? It's not that bad, is he? Couldn't God work with Saul as king? I think that's worth dwelling on for longer than we've got this morning, and do read the whole of 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel and spend some time thinking about it and discussing it. But I'll say a few things about Saul. First, here in chapter 13, he has disobeyed a direct instruction from the Lord. So Samuel says this. He says, "You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you." So the command was given through Samuel, but we know from earlier in the book Samuel was a prophet. All Israel recognised that. And it was clear that when he was speaking to Saul, he was speaking prophetically. And by that I mean he was predicting the future, yes, because he was telling Saul what was going to happen. But more widely than that, Samuel was speaking the words of God to Saul. So it's equivalent to how the Bible speaks prophetically to us. So the Bible is God speaking to us, even if it's Jesus' words or Peter's words or Paul's words. So Samuel was speaking prophetically to Saul. So for Saul to go against that is Saul to go against God's clear word to him. And perhaps that's partly why we feel Saul isn't that bad, because we're quite used to going against the Bible's clear instruction. Second, it might seem like Saul has been very obedient to God's instructions, and just at that last moment, he's been a little bit disobedient. So it's like it's 95% obedience with just a little bit of disobedience at the end. And that's maybe why it seems harsh of God. But is that right? We called this series Game of Thrones, Who Really Rules? So who is in charge of Saul? Who is he serving? Is he 95% serving the Lord and 5% himself? Or is it maybe 100% Saul? And maybe it just so happens that for a large part, what Saul wants is in line with what God wants. And therefore, it's easy for him to be obedient. It's not obedience at all. It just so happens he approves of most of God's instructions. He's happy to wait 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. But then later on that seventh day, it's too long. I'm going to do some sacrifices. I think that's best. Isn't that the point at which Saul shows his obedience? When he didn't fully understand, when he didn't think it was the best thing. Maybe children are an example of this. I say to my children, "Go and play on the iPad," and they say, "Yes, Daddy." "Go and bounce on the trampoline." "Yes, Daddy." That's not obedience. They want to do those things. And when you say, "Put the sweets back in the cupboard," you get a different reaction. Because they don't want to do that. And that is when they decide to be obedient or disobedient. That is when they decide whether they'll follow what they think is best for them or what you think is best for them. So as I said, do read 1 Samuel again afterwards and read the rest of Saul's story, which we'll also cover in future weeks, and think about his reaction to the Lord's instructions and the Lord's care for him. I don't want to pretend that I know what's going on in Saul's head, but I think as you read his story, you'll get a glimpse of someone who's a real person, and so you'll get a glimpse of the humanity, I think, that we share with Saul. So we've zoomed in on what Saul did at Gilgal to make the Lord reject him. Let's zoom out again. We've had some deja vu moments. Samuel's speech, quickly followed by the people, and particularly Saul turning away from the Lord. We've seen that happen before in the past. But as we look forward in Israel's story, we see similar patterns. Saul will continue down the path of not listening to God. He will get worse and worse. He'll be replaced by David, the best king of Israel, arguably Israel's high point as a nation, full stop. So at that point, there is hope again. Maybe it will be different this time. He defeats Goliath. He waits patiently for the Lord to make him king. He doesn't take matters into his own hands. He loves the Lord's instructions. But David has some pretty glaring character flaws, which lead him into adultery and murder. He's a terrible family. He's a terrible father, and his family falls apart. And after David, we get various other kings. And all the repetition, the cycle of judges and the speeches from the leaders, it continues into the future after Samuel. The time of the kings is not quite the neat cycle of the judges, but it's still very repetitive. Some are good, some are bad, some are really bad, but none of them make a significant difference, and Israel just continues on its trajectory away from the Lord. The deja vu moments continue all the way up to the end of the Old Testament. So, why is the Bible so repetitive? I haven't answered that yet. Let me start to answer it by asking some other questions. How many times do we need to be shown that we cannot truly follow God? How many times do we need to be shown that this is the case for all humans without exception? How many times do we need to be told that we cannot save ourselves? The Bible answers these questions by giving us the story of Israel. And the answer is many, many times. We need to be told again and again and again. Why is the Bible so repetitive? Because we need to hear about humanity's helplessness again and again. We can do nothing to help ourselves. We like to think we're decision-making machines, calculating outcomes, acting rationally. But we're not. We're trapped, and we've no way to get out and no way to help ourselves. What's God been doing in the story? This is where it gets interesting. There's a story here when you look at what God's doing, rather than just a repetitive cycle of failure. The Lord is making things happen. But what is he making happen? Why is he doing this and not that? What's his plan? And the book of Samuel starts and ends with song. At the beginning we have the song of Hannah, and at the end of 2 Samuel we have a song from David. And both of these songs have very similar themes. And I'm going to read you some of the bits of Hannah's song, highlight some of the key things she says. And what she highlights really is what God is doing. So Hannah starts in her song by saying, there's only one person in charge, and that's God. And because of that, don't be proud, don't lift yourself up. If you do lift yourself up, God will bring you down. But if you humble yourself, God will lift you up. There's a reversal going on. So let me just read the beginning of Hannah's song to you. There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God. Do not keep talking so proudly or let your mouth speak such arrogance. For the Lord is a God who knows, and by him deeds are weighed. The bows of the warriors are broken, but those who stumbled are armed with strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for food, but those who are hungry no more. She who was barren has borne 7 children, but she who had many sons pines away. I'll skip to the end of her song in a moment. I've already said we called the series Game of Thrones, Who Really Rules? I haven't watched Game of Thrones, so I know nothing. But I have it on good authority that the whole story, the whole 7 hit series and the 8 series to come, is all about one thing. Who will be sat on the Iron Throne in the end? Now, Game of Thrones are filming multiple endings just to make sure that it can't get leaked. In the book of Samuel, Hannah and David, in their songs, give us the answer. They show that they know the answer. So who will be sat on the throne of the world in the end? So Hannah says at the end of her song, in particular, God is lifting up his anointed. Anointed is Messiah in Hebrew and Christ in Greek. So at the end of Hannah's song, she says this. Those who oppose the Lord will be broken. The Most High will thunder from heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. So Hannah is singing because the Lord gave her children, but she's singing of something much bigger. It applies to everything that's happened in the book of Samuel, but it's also cosmic in its scope. You can use Hannah's song to understand the whole universe, the whole of history. God's plan for everything is to bring down the proud, to lift up the humble, and in particular, to lift up his anointed, his Christ, his Messiah. So in the cycle of human failure, God's plan from the beginning was to give strength to his king and exalt his anointed. And in spite of that cycle of failure, God's plan continues. The Lord even uses the people's foolish request for a king in his plan. It is truly incredible when you look back through the story of Israel, how God has worked through that. Saul and David are throne warmers for the anointed one, the true Christ. The Christ is the one who truly humbles himself. He is the divine king of the world, yet he becomes a weak and helpless baby. He joined us, this helpless humanity who cannot follow God. And he joins us all the way down to death. And because he is the one who truly humbled himself, he is the one who is truly lifted up. He comes back from the dead and he starts a new humanity. And he invites us to join his new humanity. He offers us a new birth. Which makes sense, doesn't it? If our situation is completely helpless, if we're incapable of serving God, then we need something drastic like a new birth to become a completely new human. And that's what happens at baptism, isn't it? That's what baptism is about. So if you found that your plans for your life have led you into hopeless cycles, then the amazing good news is you can abandon those plans and you can join God's plan. You can join his plan for a new world and a new humanity with Jesus Christ on the throne. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you are a God who saves in spite of our failure. Help us to humble ourselves and trust your plan. Amen.